Tocqueville? Thisbe repeated, frowning. A voice rose shrill from a lower floor of the dollhouse. I knew it! Ha ha ha! I knew it! See, I told you so! The major stomped the plastic roof beneath him, shouting down, Shut up, Croucher! I predicted it, didn't I? You all heard me. You never could trust them. A rumble like a lion surfaced in the major's voice. You don't want me to come down there, Croucher. Prompt silence proved the major right. I'm glad it was Bridger who asked, What's Tocqueville? The major smiled at the boy's confusion. It's our nickname for Mycroft's mysterious other obligation. Do you remember when you first met Mycroft? The golden smile on Bridger's face healed me, like sun upon a starving field. Of course. Mycroft was fixing the trash bots and saw Boo run out of juice. And Mycroft's smart, so they knew it wasn't just a U-beast, so they came to investigate. That's when you got them. I almost laughed. You got them. Such injustice to the army men. Their months of strategy, of gathering the tools, grenades as frail as firecrackers, darts of paralyzing chemicals, cannon size to them. They had spent months practicing, tackling cats and squirrels and dummies. An army of Lilliputians might tackle Gulliver in his sleep, but for 11 plastic army men to be ready at any moment to defend this boy against a full-sized human strained the limits of Earth's greatest military strategist. Strained, but did not exceed. They bested me. Me, Mycroft Canner. They spooked me with explosions, snared me with wires, blinded and deafened me with flash and smoke. It was hard, they said. I beat all 7 practiced plans and forced the major to improvise an 8th and then a 9th, right there. But in the end, I fell. Then you remember how hard it was deciding what to do with Mycroft afterwards? The veteran continued. Bridger's face contorted, furrows unnatural on that angelic brow, not yet spoiled by time. I remember Mycroft was very big. The major chuckled. You were only 5 years old then. You can't expect to remember too much. Mycroft kept asking you to let them go for just 10 minutes. I remember them saying that over and over. Just 10 minutes. The major nodded, impressed that the words had stayed in Bridger's mind. But humans remember best what is most intense, no matter how long ago it happened. I myself have few memories from the past decade which seem remotely real compared with the memories of my 2 weeks 13 years ago. It may sound mad, but how do you distinguish between memory and reality, if not by choosing the more vivid? The smells and faces of those 2 weeks are burned into my mind, more colored, more alive than the commonplace sensations of this room, this floor, this half-written page before me. Every time I close my eyes and open them again, I am surprised to find myself in this strange present. This is not where I am. Back then is where I am. This pressure is a weapon in my hand. This itch, enemy skin beneath my nails. This taste of blood. Whose? What is this at my back? A rock? A wall? Surely if I step out, I will step onto my battlefield. I find it hard to make myself believe it is a chair. The army men's attack knocked off my tracker, I explained for Carlyle's sake. The police always check on me when that happens. It would have been a disaster if they'd found me here. The major nodded. Yes, it was lucky Mycroft managed to convince us to let them go for those 10 minutes. They were barely out of the trench before the cops were on them full force. It was not just luck, reader. I recall that day, full color. Full intensity, one of few solid features in the long haze since my crimes. I remember the tiny soldiers staring up, piano wires striping my skin with red as they bound me to a scavenged chair. The memory is salient, not because of the pain or the blood, I think, for I have many scars whose stories are forgotten, but for the sensation of the bonds around my arms and ankles as I felt myself a prisoner. You must not think that bondage is one of my perversions. I have many, but not that. Rather, it linked that memory to another even more potent. The hours after my first capture 13 years ago, when I sat helpless as an insect in my plastic cage, were among the most intense I have ever experienced. So, when I found myself captured and bound again, that same helplessness awoke me. That, I am certain, was what cleared my mind so quickly. I suffered no shock, no disbelief seeing the soldiers, tiny and alive, before my eyes. I absorbed all that in an instant, pure acceptance of the miracle, and found my resolution just as quickly. I am here now to protect and guide this boy. Such salience made me persuasive as I pleaded for the gift of 10 minutes. We needed help, the major continued. A full-sized adult who could move things and get us things. So I decided to draft Mycroft. Draft them? Astonishment swept Carlyle's face. The major laughed. I don't mix well with civilians. But I'll never forget what Mycroft first said when I said I was going to draft him. Have you ever read the Recollections of Alexis de Tocqueville? I smiled, remembering the major's face back then, my tiny captor, sternness brightening to relief, recognition, eventually to delight as I explained myself, my Tocqueville. He wasn't happy because of the revelation itself, but because of how I explained it. My literary roundabout, my subtle weaving words. That was the moment the major discovered what I am. I could have lied. I could have given my captor an unreserved yes and stayed silent about any division of my loyalty. I did not. Tocqueville wrote a memoir of living through a French Revolution, the major explained, just as I had explained it to him 8 years ago and 15 yards away. Not the main one, the 1848 one. In one section, Tocqueville describes his valet. The valet wanted to join the revolution, but was also dutiful and loyal to his master. Every day the valet would come home from fighting, clean Tocqueville's shoes, brush his suit, prepare the room, then beg his master's leave and head back to the barricades for a few hours to risk his life again. He nodded to me. For Mycroft, minding Bridger is the barricades. Apparently J.E.D.D. Mason is the master. Thisbe loomed over me. Is that right? The truth caught in my throat a moment. Yes. Why? I glanced at Carlyle, so innocent of who sits before him, so calm and kind without knowing the surname Canner. I can't explain. Which basically means you're not objective on any question about J.E.D.D. Mason, Thisbe accused. You won't even answer a basic question like why they act like a crazy cultist. I looked down at my hands. I believe it is possible to be simultaneously biased and right. I work for... The major's eyes demanded truer words. I serve J.E.D.D. Mason. I do. I always will. I also, separately from that, believe that we can trust J.E.D.D. Mason better than anyone who isn't standing here right now. They are a good person. Good, honest, kind, trustworthy, and keep their promises more absolutely than anyone I've ever known. And they're unambitious. They have all the wealth and power anyone could want, the trust of every leader on earth. They have nowhere to rise, no side to help. There is no better being in the world. Believe me, there isn't. Possibly there never has been. They wouldn't exploit Bridger. They'd move sky and earth to find the best way to help Bridger use their powers for the good of all humanity. That's why I want to keep Bridger away from them for now. Because they're so good and so kind, they couldn't keep from pressuring Bridger to move too fast, to take on too much. I squeezed the child in my arms. A kid shouldn't have to face that much pressure. You saw how they tried to help that traitor security captain. They weren't being manipulative. They were being kind. Kind and too much trying to help, but they pushed too hard, made things uncomfortable. They're always like that. It takes a lot to learn to handle being near them. Once Bridger has their own plan for what they want to do first with their powers, once Carlyle, I pointed, helps Bridger to get ready to change the world, then we should go straight to J.E.D.D. Mason. And they'll make sure Bridger gets the best support the world can give. But J.E.D.D. Mason is too powerful and clumsy to be endured by anybody fragile. I don't mean powerful politically, but personally. You saw what talking to them was like. They speak only truth and do only good, and they don't know how to mitigate it the way people do. Someday, Bridger, you'll be ready for that. More than ready. I gave the child a squeeze and felt stronger addressing him who trusted me than Thisbe, whose glare stayed black. And when you are, you and J.E.D.D. Mason will make the whole world so impossibly much better. But only when you decide it's time. I was grateful during my ramble that they listened patiently, but even when I finished, they still waited, quiet, thinking on this stranger, his presence, the many facets of him I can only call too much. Thisbe spoke first. Tell me where J.E.D.D. Mason came from, Mycroft. Why did Cornell Mason adopt this particular kid? I know it was done in infancy. Whose child were they? She tried to grasp me by the hair, but I pulled away, so she had to lean far down to force my eyes to meet hers. Other rumors true? Is J.E.D.D. Mason really Hotaka Ando Mitsubishi's bastard child? Oh, right, Carlyle cried. I'd heard that once. I thought it was just gossip. Still, Thisbe leaned close. Is this some weird alliance between the Masons and the Japanese Mitsubishi? They even say Mason helped Ando get the chief director's chair. I took a deep breath. I took several. To say there is an alliance of that kind is not untrue. I can't really say more. I have to go. Mycroft, her eyes turned gentle. Nothing is more important than, like a squeal of electronic pain, my tracker's emergency siren rang out, making Thisbe jump back and the Major draw his tiny flashing blade. Is this coming through? Harsh as bad music, the voice of Sensor Ancelet burst out of the speaker of my tracker for all to hear. Look, I don't know who's there, but the servicer in front of you happens to be one of the best statistical analysts on the planet. And right now, you have them ignoring a priority one call from the Romanovan Sensor's office for an urgent analysis which has to be done yesterday. So unless whatever you're doing is more important than the economic future of the human race, would you kindly call Ekar and make them get their butt to Romanova and leave the odd jobs to people who can't save the world? Thisbe went slack-jawed. You would not think she could know me nearly a decade without learning what work I did, especially since you, who just met me, know already. But to you, demanding reader, I reveal all, while I hide what I can from friends to keep them safer. As for Carlyle, if your eyes are sharp, reader, you may now catch in his two blue eyes a glint of something darker than surprise. Can the censor hear us? Bridger mouthed. Only me, I mouthed back, then spoke aloud for the tracker. I'll be along ASAP, censor. I promise. Yes, I really mean it, I promise. I waited for Vivian to disconnect. There, they're gone. Was that really the Romanovan censor's office? Thisbe asked, almost agape. That was the censor themselves, I clarified. And before you ask, No, I can't discuss my work with Romanova, just as I can't discuss my work for J.E.D.D. Mason, just as you can't tell me the details of what you and Cato do for your own Bosch.